This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores. I am Peddlin' Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk. It is May 2nd, 2018. Welcome to Bicycle Talk, this week with my co-host, Fran Storch.
Hi.
There she is. A show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show, you can call or text us right now at 860-486-9487, or you can email me at bicycletalk, the numeral one, at gmail.com. And if you're listening to this on a podcast, you can send me an email at bicycletalk, the numeral one, at gmail.com. You can also visit and comment at Bicycle Talk on Facebook. If you want to listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk, you can listen on whus.org or on iTunes. Beginning with Ron's Rant of the Week, I posted this on Facebook earlier this morning. Okay, here it is. That sponsored, quote-unquote, rider that proudly wears the uniform of the business or organization that is supporting them and possibly their team, and you who comes up upon another rider on the road or on the trail that is not friendly or does not acknowledge that the other rider as they pass. Bad message, like in all caps, bad message to the cyclists that are a bunch of snobs. All right, this is how you get that cyclists are a bunch of snobs problem. Okay, you're not being a good ambassador. That just drives me crazy. So why do I bring this up? Well, I'm finishing up our nice Saturday ride with our club ride, and I'm coming home, and I'm riding up to my house, and I had a quote-unquote sponsored rider pass me with a local college on their shorts and a local bike shop on their jersey. And they just blew by me like I was standing still. And, you know, I had just finished riding 40 miles, so I wasn't really too peppy at the point, but they rode right by me and didn't say a word. Of course, I, being Peddlin' Ron, who was a very social person, got on to the, hey, how you doing today? Have a great day. No response. So I chased down the cyclist, who thought they were all that. And
is
I know,
that, are you sure about that? You sure that they thought that they were all that? That's why they did it?
Well, I'm not sure, but I'm assuming that they were special or far more special than I was.
That was a big assumption.
Okay, so it's a big assumption. The point is, they didn't say anything. All
yes,
right,
they didn't
and,
say anything.
And I'm going somewhere with this.
Okay.
All right. So I rode up to this person, and I basically came around her, and I said, hey, how you doing? I scared the living daylights out of her. She mm-hmm. didn't know I was there. She had assumed that she had completely dusted me and moved on down the road. That is, I know, more assumptions. Anyway, so I gave her a message that, you know, you might want to just say hi every once in a while.
You're going to let me say something when you're done with this.
I am going to let you say something when I'm done with this. This is why we like to have you here, because I know that you're going to smack me around a little bit with
yes.
this. Yeah, well, that's okay. You can smack
me around. You deserve it.
Okay. So I do. So does this rider. So anyway, this rider, I simply informed her that it would be really nice if she were a little friendlier with the other riders that are out there on the road. That's all. Very, very simple. Now, why do I say this? I'll tell you why I say this. Because we are sitting in the middle of a very large university that has a very prestigious basketball program, a women's basketball program, as well as men's. But the women's basketball program is run by a gentleman by the name of Gino Auriemma, who's a great coach. But the big thing that Gino pushes, and he pushes really hard on his girls, is when you step out into the public, you are friendly. You are open. You respond to people. You smile. You appreciate them. You thank them for being fans. That's what you do. And it's the same thing when you're wearing a uniform of a business that is donating dollars and time and energy into your training, your fitness, and your sport and livelihood. And, okay, I've said it. Fire away.
So you made a big assumption there. The big assumption is that this young woman did it because she thought she was better than you. That's a huge assumption. That's not about her. That's about you.
Okay.
Now, I'm going to agree with you. The best thing would have been if this young woman had greeted you and had the mindset. Because one of the reasons that you can assume is that she didn't have the mindset that Gino brings about with the UConn women's basketball team, where he impresses upon them the importance of greeting the community. So for whatever reason, this young woman didn't do that. You don't know if she wasn't there laying down a really hard interval and she was just so focused that when you went by her, she wasn't paying attention. It could have been as simple as that. To make an assumption that somebody goes by you and doesn't talk to you, that's a beef of mine. When I don't say hello to somebody and people assume that it's because I'm mad at them or don't like them, can't I just be in my own world? Can't I just have my own thoughts? It's not because I don't like you. Why would you assume that? I mean, if you're assuming I didn't talk to you because I'm mad at you or don't like you, that's on you. That's not on me. So that's first of all. However, I do agree with you. The right thing for that young woman to do would have been to greet you. So, and what we can assume is that she didn't have the mindset for what you're talking about. The reason, presumably, you want her to say hello is because you want there to be a good relationship between the community and cyclists, and so that a cyclist is seen as friendly. So she should be she should be waving to cars. She should be waving to people. She should certainly be waving to other cyclists.
Ambassador.
So she said exactly. Mm-hmm. So she doesn't have the mindset. You can't assume what she was thinking about you or how special she felt. She might have been feeling very bad about herself because her last interval didn't go so well. You have no idea.
Right.
But the thing is, if she has that piece of information that it's a good idea to say hello for the reason of ambassadorship, she might be more likely to do it. So I do agree with you there. It's just a matter. So you communicating to her that that's a good thing to do could be helpful. And whoever's coaching her really should have communicated that to her. But I don't think you have to assume that if somebody ignores you, that it's because they don't like you or they don't want to talk to you.
All right. Well, this is why we're having that discussion, though, because I want to make sure that people understand that if they are doing an athletic activity and they are doing it and able to do it because of the generosity of the person or the business or whatever that is paying for advertising on their jersey, they need to give back the right message.
That's true. And like I said, the all you can assume about this young woman is she wasn't at that moment, she was not in that mindset, perhaps because it was never communicated to her, so it didn't occur to her, and perhaps for other reasons, because she was in the middle of a tough interval and she was focused. But giving her the message is good, and it's interesting that it came from you, and it ought to have come from her coaches. And
right.
And it would have been better if she had greeted you.
Right.
But I think it's because she wasn't in the mindset.
So, you know, I posted this on Facebook because I thought maybe it would create some discussion. And sure enough, it did. I reached 52 people right away. And Billy, our good friend Billy, Too Tall Billy, good shout, big shout out to Too Tall Billy. The jersey that I wear is of Team and in Training and Leukemia and Lymphoma Society. I am a coach and an ambassador of the society. Anyone who wears a jersey is also an ambassador. If you can't ride right or be friendly to other cyclists, don't wear the jersey and embrace or hurt the society. There's a certain bike shop or an organization that I will not support from the questionable way they ride. So riders that do pay attention as to who you are. Thanks, Ron, for letting me vent. So big shout out there. And then I got another response from Anthony or Tony Trellis. And he says, bike riders that don't even nod or wave bother me. I mean, yeah, maybe you're in the zone, but let's be more friendly out there with our two-wheeled folks. If you blow off my doors off and am on my commute to work without a simple hello, don't be surprised if I return the favor with panniers on and wearing jeans. So, you know, I mean, you know, get over yourselves. It's okay. It's all right. Okay. You can be friendly. It's like, I remember doing a time trial. Okay. Flat out. All I've got my head down. I'm going as hard as I can. There was someone out in their yard doing yard work. What did I do? I said, hey, how you doing? And I went blowing by. It didn't require any extra energy. It did not affect my time trial or the performance that I was giving.
Well, I do that too. And actually, for me, quite honestly, I think it's especially important that I greet people while I'm doing interval. If it's possible for me to do it, it's especially important for me to greet people while I'm doing intervals. Because then they see me riding very hard doing intervals, and they're going to notice me there and know that I'm, you know, you're going to see me on back road and on 89 doing intervals. And it's not only is it an ambassadorship, it's, hi, I'm, you know, yes, I'm a cyclist and I'm a regular person. I'm saying hello to you. And also, by the way, I'm going to be here laying it down. So look out for me. There's a lot of good reasons to do it. And there's good reason to do it specifically when you're doing intervals. There's another nice reason to do it, because sometimes when you're doing hill repeats, you get people walking or riding by with their window open, and they'll wave to you and they'll encourage you.
Right.
And if it's somebody walking and you go up and down and up and down, they're like, what are you doing? And you're like, well, I'm on number three. I got three more to go, you know, and
right.
You have a connection, and that's awesome.
Right. And you know, shout out again to Amber Pierce, who is a huge advocate of this. She's a professional bicycle racer. What does she do? She greets people. She talks to them. She waves to them. She went blasting by our house full steam on a training ride a couple of weeks ago. I got an apology from her because she didn't stop and say hi, but she was in the middle of an interval. But she did say hi when she went by, didn't she?
She still waved to us, yeah.
She still waved to us, yeah. And she still said hi when she went by. So, you know, it's not that hard. And what you're doing is not for you. It's for us. It's for all of us.
It's for everyone.
It's for everyone. So, you know, anyway, that's my rant. It was a good one. It was a long one. I know. And Fran kind of gave me a bad, hard time about it. But that's okay. It's that's why Franny's here. She's here to level me a little bit and keep me in line.
You have a thing about assuming people think they're all that and don't like you, silly.
Yeah, well, anyway. On a positive side, okay, on the positive side, May is National Bike Month. Did you know that?
Yay!
Yeah, that's kind of a big deal, you know. It's sponsored by the League of American Bicyclists, and it's celebrated in communities from coast to coast. It was actually established in 1956. National Bike Month is a chance to showcase the many benefits of bicycling and encourage more folks to give biking a try. So National Bike to Work Week is, May 14th through the 18th. And National Bicycle to Work Day is May 18th. We'll talk more about that in a little bit. I just wanted to bring it up as the positive side for today. May is National Bike Month. Maintenance Minute. Flats happen. All right. So why do I put flats happen? Because they happen. You get flat tires sometimes. You get a flat tire on the road. Hopefully you know how to repair your flat. Hopefully your flat wasn't so catastrophic that you won't be able to get home and you are able to get yourself back on the road and back into your happy zone of riding your bike. But I want to talk a little bit about some things you can do about flat tires. Just two little ideas. And I know some people don't like to do this because they, and you shouldn't do this unless you have the skills of which to do it. I have been doing this since day one because I just hate getting flat tires. I don't want my ride interrupted. And if I'm riding on a road and there's a pile of glass that I'm riding through, the first thing that I do is I reach down and I wipe my tires off with my hands. I have done this for a number of years. You can comment in a second. And a number of years. And I have not yet to this day, and we're talking over 40 years now, have ever cut my fingers. But I have always felt the glass come out of the tires. So it's a skill. It requires practice. And I don't recommend it to everyone because
it requires long arms,
it
which
helps.
I don't have.
It helps to have long arms, too.
See, I see you doing it. It's like you don't even bend over and you reach your arms down and you do it on your front and your back tire. I have gotten to the point where I can do it on my front tire. I cannot for the life of me do it on my back tire.
Really?
My arms just aren't that long.
No. Well, maybe, you know, flexibility.
Well, or if I really want, if it's a bad patch of glass and it doesn't interrupt the ride, I should stop and just stop the bike and do it.
Right, right.
Sometimes that's worth doing.
Okay, all right. I don't think I'm going to make Fran real happy today. I'm going to try, but I'm not going to make her real happy today.
Yeah, but it'll make for a good show.
It will make for a good show. Okay, how about road choice? Okay, let's talk about road choice. Why do I talk about road choice? Because roads that are more heavily traveled tend to have more litter on them. And the litter usually comes from, you know, all those cyclists that are on it throwing all their glass bottles off of their bicycles. Well,
no.
Maybe it doesn't. No, it has to do with probably the motorized vehicles that have that want to keep the inside of their cars very clean, but they tend to do it by eliminating their trash on the highways, which is generally illegal and usually has a fine that goes along with it. But, you know, they do it. So why not choose the roads that aren't as heavily traveled? As you will find, you'll see that if you get yourself off of a numbered road, a state road that has a lot of traffic, they usually have also very wide shoulders, which some people deem as safer than the back roads. I will argue with that. I will argue that point all day long, but we're not going to do that today because we're talking about flat tire exposure. Anyway, if you go off onto the back roads, the quieter roads, the ones that are less traveled, you're going to also find that there's going to be a lot less trash on those roads. So if you want to eliminate some of your flat tire exposure, try taking a really good look at road choices. When I had my bicycle shop, I would get people that would come in the door and they were chronic flat tire people. And they would come in and go, this is the third flat I've had this week. I can't believe this. I get so many flat tires. I don't understand. And I would say, so where do you ride? And they go, well, I ride all over the place. I said, yeah, but what roads do you ride on? Well, what do you mean? Where are you going? And I go, well, tell me what roads you ride on. And they would pick out State Road 32 here or State Road 6 or State Road 195. Those are roads that we have up here in northeastern Connecticut. And or State Road 44 or some of the other heavily traveled roads. And I would say, that's where you're getting flats. And they'd look at me in like in a very curious way and say, what are you talking about? And I explain to them about the fact that there's more trash on the heavily traveled roads than there is on the back roads. And once I convinced them that maybe they could look at using those heavily traveled roads to get from one back road to another back road, they started going through that practice and they would come back and thank me because they weren't getting as many flat tires. Now, that wasn't really good for my business, but it was good for the cyclist. So therefore, it was a good thing. So flats happen. It's a thing. We have to deal with it. Oh, well. Hopefully, we don't deal with it a lot. So I have to bring up another thing, too. You know what else is really cool about May? Besides the fact that it is bike month, the Giro is coming. The Giro is coming. The Giro d'Italia is starting in just a day or two. It's really, really close now. So we are, it's the Tour of Italy, for those of you who are not aware, but if you ride on two wheels and have any interest at all in cycling, you probably know a little bit about this. At least you've heard about it. Maybe you've seen something on television about it. I actually got a comment on this because I had posted it also, and my friend Bill D said he heard that Froome will be paid an extra 2 million euros to appear for this. They're trying to get Chris Froome to show up for the Giro. He said he watched a YouTube video showing how much many of the riders make in a year, and Chris Froome makes about 4 million, while Sagan is at 5 million euros. How about that? So, you know, yes, there is money in professional bicycle racing, and a rider who just starts out with the pros is at about 95,000 euros. Not all that much compared to the other sports, but you know what? It's a living. It's a dangerous way to make a living, but it is a living. So anyway, thank you for sharing that, Bill. That was great. That's a really cool thing. I love to see that you are as into the whole bike racing thing as I am. I think it's really cool, and I can't wait to sit down and start watching some Giro d'Italia. So it is coming. There's a few things I have here, too. I've got, let's see here. We've got the route. Okay, the route this year. This is really interesting. Fran, you'll take note on this one. The first three stages are in Israel.
Yay, Eretz Israel.
So the first one, which is a time trial, is in Jerusalem. It's a time trial that is, let's see here, it is 9.7 kilometers long, and it is flat. Second day is, it's a showdown in Tel Aviv, is what they call it, and it's 167 kilometers, also very flat. And then the third day will be a big desert race, and it's 229 kilometers and flat. I imagine it's probably going to be pretty warm too, I would think. Then they get a rest day so the first day is Friday, which is this Friday coming up, and the fourth day, or between the third and the fourth day, there will be a rest day, because that's when they're going to travel back over to Italy, and then they're going to go to a 198 kilometer stage in the hills. And or there will be some hills, and moving on, more hills. And by stage number six, which will be Thursday on the 10th, you're going to see the first big mountain finish. So that's kind of cool. And then there will be some more mountains in there, too, when you get to stage eight and stage nine, and 200-kilometer races, too. So pretty long stuff. The Giro is coming. I love it. So, last day will be May 27th, and that'll be a 115-kilometer sprint, and I believe that goes right into Rome, and that's where it will all end. You can go on to online, and you can go to sites like cyclingstage.com, and you can see maps of the profiles, which is really cool. So it'll show you all the different profiles of the races, and which is neat, because you can see, you know, how big the hills are, how long some of the stages are. It's kind of a cool thing. So if we move on to this, the first big mountain stage here, I'm just going to take a look at this. It gets pretty hilly. It's definitely going to get pretty hilly. So a lot of fun to watch if you're into bicycle racing. Categorizes all the climbs. Kind of a cool thing. So the Giro is coming, and it's, again, a very interesting year, because it actually starts in Israel, which is really cool. So, and there is a little, looks like there is a little island stage here, too, in Sicily. So that's kind of a cool thing, too. Unless that's not Sicily. I don't know. I don't know my geography real well. Moving on. Enough of the Giro. We're going to go back, and we're going to talk about a few other things that are going on here. And back to Bike Month, which I wanted to talk a little bit more about this. And bicycle commuting data. Now, if you go on to the League of American Bicyclists, you're going to see an awful lot of information about National Bike Month. There are Bike Month dates and event times. There are there's a section here that says planning a Bike Month event. There's also promotional materials you can get from the League and bike commuting data. So I'm going to back up. I'll go back to the bike commuting data here in just a second. And we'll talk about planning a month event. Now, the thing about this is you're going to find that, you know, you probably should have done your groundwork back in February. And I'll try to remember next year to talk about this when we get to that point. But first thing they say is in February, you write a plan as to what you're going to do to put on an event for the bike friendly month, and you might initiate your fundraising efforts at that time and build partnerships in February and March. And if you're bringing in volunteers to help you with your event, you want to talk about doing that probably in February and March also. You want to get your major promotion out for your event in April. And also throughout the month of May to let people know that it is bike month and there are things that are going on. Maybe you have a local ride that you're putting on because of it. Maybe your business might be sponsoring an event. That might be kind of a cool thing to do. And then you go through and during the month of May, you can reward volunteers and recognize sponsors. And that's really kind of March through May that you're going to do that. And then when you get done, you're going to evaluate your success in May and June. And then preparing for next year is ongoing. So those are ideas, 9 steps to a successful event. And that kind of works with any event that you might be putting on. Some events require a little bit more planning in depending on how big your event is. And so anyway, that's a thing you might want to look at for the future. Now I'll move on to bicycle commuting data. So the number of bicyclists, it's growing rapidly from coast to coast. The National Household Travel Survey showed that the number of trips made by bicycle in the U.S. more than doubled from 1.7 billion in 2001 to 4 billion in 2009. That's kind of an exciting statistic. For bicyclists of all stripes, there's nothing like Bike to Work Day, an annual celebration of active transportation, thanks in part to encouraging efforts like the Bike to Work Day. The number of bike commuters are on the rise, as well as especially in the bicycle-friendly communities, one of which we're sitting in right here. Did you see the signs, Fran? Have you checked it out? The League of American Bicyclists has awarded Mansfield, our town, Mansfield, right here, we are a bike-friendly community. And if you take a look right down the street from where we live on Bassett's Bridge Road, when you cross over the Mansfield line, there's a sign up that says bike-friendly community with a league symbol.
Oh, nice.
How about that?
So when you're entering into Mansfield
from
Chaplin.
Into Mansfield, you're going to see the bicycle-friendly community. Oh. If you want to become a bicycle-friendly community, you go to the League of American Bicyclists, and they will give you a step-by-step way of putting it together. It is a process. It requires a lot of local education. It requires clinics. It requires making sure that you're in good, good conversation with your local authorities and your local governments. So there are a number of steps. And a big shout out to Lon from Bike Mansfield and Amber also from Bike Mansfield and all the other members of Bike Mansfield for all the work that they put into it to make it happen. And it's an ongoing thing. So there are still more things that are happening. Their town of Mansfield, or actually Bike Mansfield, also sponsors the National Bike to Work Day. And that will be on that Friday, the 18th. Is that what I said it was? I think it was. Anyway, they're going to have a table out at the town green. And if you're riding your bike up through stores and through the UConn campus and you're doing your bike to work, then you can stop by and get yourself a little snack and a little pat on the back. And I don't know what else they're doing this year, but if you go to Bike Mansfield and go to their website online, they can probably give you some information on that. So big shout out to Lon for making our town a bike-friendly town. There's only about 500 in the United States. So we're in amongst an elite few, is what I like to call that. But it's going to grow very rapidly now. I think more and more people are seeing it. They're seeing the benefits to it. They're seeing that the more you get people out on bikes, the happier people are. There's just so many tremendous benefits. So from 2000 to 2013, bicycle commuting rates in large bicycle-friendly communities increased by 105%, far above the national average of 62%, and more than doubled the rate of non-bicycle-friendly cities, which is 31%. So if you go again, once again, if you look on the bikeleague.org and you go and look under their bicycle commuting data, you'll see there's a big map on there, and that map will show you the states and the percentages that they're up. And the heaviest states here I see are Louisiana, Tennessee, Kentucky. It looks like, that looks like Virginia and Pennsylvania and Massachusetts. Those are the heaviest. with others like New Mexico and Missouri and New York and Vermont coming in also at 70 to 100% increase. The other states, not so good. Connecticut, not so good. Not so good at all. Increased by 0 to 39% here in Connecticut. So that's not a good thing. We hope to see a lot more happening. There is going to be a big announcement here very soon from Bike Walk Connecticut. They have hired a new executive director, so there will be some more information on that soon. And hopefully we are shouting out to them and already have shouted out to them to get the new director online so we can talk about their goals and initiatives in the future. So we need to be one of those nice, dark states that they're showing here on this chart that that we have online here. Because Connecticut's looking a little bleak at the moment, or anyway, a little washed out compared to some of the others. So is your area a bicycle-friendly community? What do you do in your town to make your town a bicycle-friendly community? Are you considering becoming a member of the Bicycle-Friendly America and getting your community registered with the League of American Bicyclists? It's a good thing. It takes some effort. It's not going to happen overnight. I think Lon worked on this thing for like a year or more. Maybe it was more than a year. But he eventually got it. And, you know, the cool thing was we had a representative from the League of American Bicyclists show up to a town meeting and made the presentation to the town at that time. So it was a very nice ceremony, which is cool. And then we have these really cool signs. So what does it mean for you as a cyclist? It means that because there is an awareness in your town that you are a bicycle-friendly community, that you've done the homework to make your town safer, to make your town more aware, and to encourage more people to get out and ride their bikes, which is going to create a safer area for you to ride your bike, which is good. Maybe you would consider riding your bike to work one day. Maybe you would consider this National Bike to Work Day. I got a big challenge for you, and this is a big one. And we're going to talk about this more in the future. I want you to take a look at the possibility of taking the keys to your automobile and placing them somewhere where you can't touch them for an entire weekend. See if you can do it. It's a challenge. And if you can do that, then great. If you do that, please address it by sending me a note at BicycleTalk1@gmail.com, or you can also contact me on Facebook with it at Bicycle Talk. I would love to hear your story about what you did to give up on a motorized vehicle for an entire weekend. Now, this is assuming that you are someone that has a motorized vehicle that you use on a regular basis. Not someone like my friend Tony, who seems to just live on his bicycle and get everything done on his bicycle already. He's out of the loop. He's already confirmed. He's already set. So anyway, I'm really looking for people who have been, how can I put this, a slave to their automobile for many years. I'm looking more for that person to see if they can just understand exactly what it's like. I had this discussion with someone a couple of weeks ago, and they said, well, how do you can't do that. You just can't do it. You don't understand. I have kids, and I have to go grocery shopping, and, you know, I've got to pick up all the food for the week and all. And I said, a bicycle trailer will hold 12 bags of groceries, and now you're okay. If you put a set of panniers on the back of your bike on a rack, you can carry two full shopping bags full of groceries. As a matter of fact, you don't even have to bring bags with you because you can bring your panniers in and you can fill them up and use them as your grocery bags. So now you're being environmentally correct too at the same time. And you can get a fair amount of food in two bags of groceries. I think actually Fran and I, when we shop and we go to a place like our local food co-op or the grocery store, we rarely use more than two bags when we're shopping between the two of us. So it's not a difficult thing to do. It's something that you can do. You just have to wrap your mind around this idea that the bicycle is a mode of transportation and can be used that way. So the challenge is out there. Full day Saturday, full day Sunday, no automobiles. Give it a try. see what kind of results you come up with. And please report back to me, because I'd love to hear this. I just really would love to hear this. Because I'll admit, I am a slave to my automobile, and I shouldn't be. I shouldn't be, because I am, you know, I'm pedaling around, I'm a bike guy. So I definitely should not be a slave to my vehicle, but I do have a tendency. I get, you know, it's a lazy thing, because if you plan correctly, if you plan around, you know, you plan your food, you plan your travel, you plan your work correctly, you can really work it into your life. And, you know, if you just ride your bike for a couple of days, you may be really, really surprised at how good you feel from doing that. Not only physically, because you did the physical effort, but also you're going to feel emotionally good about it, because you did something really good. You did something good for yourself, for society, for the environment. It's all a good thing. So let's take a real good look at that and see about the possibilities of dropping the vehicle for a couple of days. I got a post from our friend Dagmar, who is a very politically active woman in the Windham region. And this post was about an architect and planner, Jan Gehl, who looks back on how he helped transform Copenhagen into one of the world's most livable cities, and talks about how people can reclaim their streets. So the website that it comes from is, it's called citylab.com. So it's citylab.com. And the article is basically it's about this Copenhagen mastermind, Jan Gehl. And so he's pushing the idea of, this guy is, he's an advocate of bike lanes, shared streets, walkable cities, and they can take a lesson from their adversaries. If they want to build communities where people, not cars, occupy the pavement, show the receipts, count all the pedestrians, the cyclists, the strollers, and the cafe loungers going by, just as highway planners have long tallied up road users in vehicles. So if you bring that hard data, it's the only way the government will listen. According to Jan Gehl, a pioneering Danish architect, urbanist, and planner who helped turn Copenhagen into one of the world's most livable cities over the past 50 years. So, if you really want to do this, if you're interested in doing this, and I know Lon did this when we were trying to become a bicycle-friendly town here in Mansfield, one of the things that he did was he would sit on busy street corners up here. I believe he did it right up here in stores. I think he actually did it in a variety of places around town. But he would count the number of cars, and he would also count the number of bicycles and the number of pedestrians that went through a particular busy intersection in an hour's period of time, or maybe a 2 hours period of time. It's great information, because what you may find is you may find that you have more pedestrians and cyclists than you actually realized. Now, you come up here to this particular area here, we're on a college campus, so we have an enormous number of bicycles and pedestrians, more pedestrians than bicycles, actually. But that's because, you know, people walk to get around up here. That's a common mode of transportation. They either use a bus or they walk. And it's just makes it a much more bike-friendly and people-friendly climate. So why is this important? It's important because people aren't trapped inside of their dark, cavernous lives, and they get out and they talk to people, and they become immersed in conversations. They get to know people, and it humanizes us better when we can get out and do that sort of thing. So it allows us to be actually calmer in our lives. And it's something that we're all missing. The minute we park ourselves inside of the metal box and drive ourselves somewhere, we are now in a very secluded and lonely place. And the only thing that we have to keep us from being lonely is our radios or our musical entertainment or our cell phones. Please, no, not cell phones if you're driving. But yeah, that's exactly how we do it. and we sort of plug in to this world, and we don't have any human contact. And without that human contact, we really lose concept of what's going on in the world and what people are like. So, but when you get out and you ride your bike, or you get out and you go for a walk, you're going to run into people. You're going to get a friendly smile, something you wouldn't see behind the big metal box, but you would see if you were out on the streets. I still am, and I'm going to shout out on this if anyone is listening here that would like to get involved with this. I'd really like to get some bicycle police officers on the air with me for a show, because the ones that I have spoken to, I always inquire when I see a police officer that's on a bicycle. I always ask, so how is it being a police officer on the bike? How does this work? Do you like it? Does it work for you? Are you able to effectively do your job? How is this? And the first thing that they say, the first and foremost thing that comes out of every single police officer's mouth is, I feel like a human again. I'm no longer looked at like the scary person in the dark cruiser. I am now looked at as a person who is enforcing the law, but is out there and is a person and is a human. It humanizes everything. So not only does it humanize people when they're riding their bicycles out in public, and saying hi to others as they're riding by when maybe somebody's out working in their yard or out walking their dog or going for a walk or whatever it is. It changes the way we all look at one another. Bicycles are really a good thing. And, you know, I preach to the choir. I know that those of you who are out there listening to me and all ride bicycles, you all understand this. It does bring up my earlier rant, though, about being friendly when you're on your bicycle and how important it is to be friendly when you're on your bicycle, because there's just so much goodness to it. So you know, get out and ride your bike. Try that weekend challenge for me. I think that'd be a good thing. So moving on to this thing, Copenhagen. You know, Fran, we got to get to Copenhagen at some point. Like, this is like a must do on the list of things to do, because I just want to experience it. I want to feel this. I want to feel the energy that's there, and just understand why, you know, how it could possibly be. I was at a summit a couple of weeks back that was hosted by Bike Walk Connecticut, and there was a gentleman there from Northwestern University in Boston, and he spent some time there. He spent a year in Copenhagen, and I think it was Copenhagen. Anyway, he spent some time over there, and he learned a lot. He's a traffic engineer. That's what he does. He teaches engineering, traffic engineering at Northwestern University. So he's a really interesting guy. And by going there and experiencing it and living in it for a year, he really brought back incredibly valuable information and skills to help teach others how to live in a world that doesn't involve automobiles. You know, I'm not going to say anything terrible about automobiles. I know there's a lot of people out there that love them, but, you know, it's definitely something to consider. So I guess got a response from Laura, who was on last week, and her comment on the Facebook site was, let's just be nice to each other. That's true. We should just be nice to each other. And I'm just going to say, it's a lot easier to do when you're not wrapped around the big steel box or wrapped inside of the big steel box. So there's a little bit more within this article, which I just found fascinating, because there's some great information in here. There's a question here that was asked to this gentleman. Do you cycle in Copenhagen? And if yes, for what purpose do you use your bike? And the response is, I am now 81 years old and I do cycle, but locally. No long trips. I used to commute to work or to the School of Architecture when I was younger, but now I take the bus, the train, or the metro. I bike in my local area, which means to the tennis club, the corner store, and the shops. The other question that came up here is, you travel all over the world. Which city has surprised you most recently in terms of balanced transportation planning? And the response was, he's been extremely impressed by what is going down in, what's happening in Moscow. So there's some really positive efforts. In just 5 years, they've cleaned up the city, got the parking organized, introduced wider pavements and bike lanes in a city bike system. And they have been very focused on making a much more livable city for pedestrians and bicyclists. And they have done miracles in a very short time. So this is not a lifetime commitment here. This is something that can with enough energy behind it and enough positive thoughts about how you can transform your local community, you can get a tremendous amount done in a very, very short period of time. So there's, you know, there's things that we can do, and I really think that we need to find more ways in our society to calm our society down. And of course, because I'm a bicycle guy, because I'm an outdoors person, I really believe that getting out more is truly the answer to this and will make a big, big difference. So anyway, I just thought this was interesting, and I thank Dagmar for sending me over the link to this piece. It was once again at citylab.com. And it is basically looking at how the architecture has transformed Copenhagen into one of the most livable cities. So they set a great example. So if you're looking to do this, if you're looking for a way to find a good example, look at what they've done in some of these cities in Europe. Check it out. Check out Minneapolis, St. Paul. Right here in the United States. Check it out. Number one most bicycle-friendly city in the United States. Yes, that's true. Minneapolis. That is the town. That is the city that they see 20 below zero in the middle of the winter. It's all true. That is a city that gets a fair amount of snow. It is not a really weather-friendly city in the wintertime, but they are the number one most bicycle-friendly city in the United States. Look at their structure. Look at how they did it. Look at how they laid it all out. When you go into cities like that, or you go into places like, I think of Eugene, Oregon. And when I went to Eugene, it was many years ago. I was working with a company called Burley, who made trailers, bicycle trailers, of which I still have a Burley trailer. And they were making a number of other things, and I was representing them. So I went out there, and I spent 3 or 4 days in Eugene understanding how their operation worked and going through some sales seminars. And there were over 110 miles of bike paths in Eugene at that time, and that was a long time ago. So it can be done. You just need to put the groundwork in, go out and do it. Mostly, though, you have to educate the powers that be as to why this is going to make their community safer and why this is going to make their community more friendly in general. So there's a thing here that I pulled up, and we've got a few more minutes to play around with this. I went on to cyclingweekly.com, and I found the 11 types of cyclists that we all know. And so I thought maybe Fran might be interested in jumping in on this one. So I sent her over a link. So it says here, cyclists come in all shapes and sizes, but all personalities as well. Do you love your cycling history or keep up to date with the latest tech trends? And the first is, what do we have here, Fran? We got the hedonist? Is that
the hedonist.
The hedonist.
Yes.
Type of person who bangs on about how great it is to ride a bike. I don't know anyone like that. No. I don't know who they're talking about. I just don't understand.
Gives you a new zest for life.
I'm that guy. I'm totally that guy. So,
but they ride old rickety bikes.
I have some old bikes. I don't ride them very often, but I do have some old bikes. No, I am the person who tells everyone how great it is to ride a bike. Obviously, it's kind of the basis of this whole show and my enthusiasm to cycling. And, you know, how being on two wheels gives you a new zest for life. It's a good thing. I was just talking to somebody about it today, actually, after my indoor cycling class. The masochist. Do you know the masochist, Fran? Have any idea who that person is?
I don't know.
So here's the quote. Are you doing any riding this week, John? And the other quote, the response is, yeah, I've signed up for to do a 100-mile time trial on Sunday morning.
Is that a thing?
There are people that go out and do 100-mile rides, and they time themselves when they do them. They may do them by themselves and to have their own bragging rights afterwards, or they may be doing a local charity ride, or they may be doing, some sort of a club-sponsored ride or whatever. But their goal is to go out and just,
hurt themselves.
Hurt themselves.
Yeah.
Right. Hence, they become the masochist.
Yeah.
So, masochists are the type of cyclists that tell you that they've spent their weekend doing hill repeats up Wenatz Pass. I don't know where that is. And at least 50 miles from their house. And then they took the scenic route to get there. So they ride 50 miles, do hill repeats, and then ride home. These are sickos. But we know these people. We definitely know these people. And the next one is the accumulator of miles.
It's a big hill in it's a big hill in England. It's in Derbyshire.
Oh, is that where it is?
Yeah, it's in England.
Okay. This is in England. This is a British site, so that's probably why.
Right.
So then the next one is the accumulator of miles.
Mm.
Okay. Not to be confused with the masochist. The accumulator takes the opportunity to rack up the miles, even if it means making their life significantly harder. The kind of person who wheels out the expensive racing bike for a trip to
Tesco's
when they need a loaf of bread. Have you ever tried to retain an air of respectability in a supermarket in full lycra and cleats? All the time.
Yeah.
I don't have a problem with that.
Yeah.
You get over it. Moving forward to the hoarder. The hoarder is someone who just can't
have a lot of stuff.
Get enough good bike stuff.
Mm.
New bib shorts? Hmm. The hoarders have a ridiculous amount of product that they keep along the way. I think I might live with one, but I'm not sure about that. Mm-hmm. Am I close?
They have a lot of stuff.
Well, arguably these riders are the easiest to buy presents for, as their thirst for the new kit is insatiable, although finding something they don't already have could be a challenge.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be you.
Okay. Fine.
You're definitely that person. The fair weather cyclist. These are the people who spend hours of their lives plotting potential routes on Strava and then never actually ride them because the weather looks a bit iffy.
Well, yeah, I'm that sometimes.
You are that sometimes.
Yeah.
I've heard that. I've heard that from Fran more than once. Be it meteorological problems or an unidentified injury, these riders will find an excuse not to get out on their bikes.
No, that's not me.
Yeah, that's not you. You usually get out. You're usually pretty good about it. But you do moan about it a bit.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, if it's really, really windy and cold and raw, but so do you.
I'm with you.
Yeah.
That's why I have alternatives.
Yeah.
I always have alternatives. And then there's a little clip here, a side clip that we don't have time for, the 10 excuses we make for not going out and riding. I'm going to finish this off with the tech geek is another one of these riders. Type of person who can spot a compact FSA crankset from 30 meters off and notices immediately if you get a new headset cap.
You can do that.
Yeah. The condescending tech geek. The kind of person who can spot that same crankset from 30 meters off and then berates you and the other for the other 29 meters of your decision to purchase such an apparently terrible item with such obscene gear ratios. That's a get over yourself problem. You know what? If you're out riding your bike, I don't care what kind of gear you got. I really don't. Just get out and ride your bike. Enjoy your bike. Be happy. Smile. Enjoy your day. The statistician. Okay, so this is the person who has to record everything. And if we're to climb that mountain in an hour, we'll have an average of 300 watts, they tell you, putting their calculator and their power charts down. This despite the fact that they've never put out 300 watts in their life, and let alone on a 10% grade for 60 minutes.
10% for 60 minutes? Is that a thing?
That would hurt.
Oh.
That would hurt. You could do that. You could find those.
Oh.
You can find those for sure. Not around here, but, you know, you need some good mountains for it. Anyone who uses Strava can get a little engrossed in their stats after a ride, but the statistician will be able to recall the exact progression up that hill near their house at will and often without prompt. Next one on the list is the commuter. And the commuter is the person who is in your office who sits there with a smug look on their face. As Gene over in accounting slumps in 20 minutes late after being stuck in traffic. Mm-hmm. There you go. So, you know, this is, they're smug because they got there first, because they rode their bike. Of course, it's a beautiful thing. And then there's the extreme commuter, and the extreme commuter is the one that is similar to above, but this is someone who knows that lives 30 miles from work, and yet they can cycle in every day. Oh, I know these people. I definitely know these people.
Yeah, we do know these people.
For sure. Absolutely. Shout out to Tony again. He doesn't live that far from work, but he has been known to do some long commutes. The historian, okay? It's like when Eric von der Aden won stage 10 of the 1984 Tour de France, the historian chimes as they sprint past you. They can instantly recall the result of any race in history as well as the components used on most of the bikes. Those are the historians. They're like the hedonists, where they're likely to ride a really old bike, maybe a replica of Giovanni Bataclan's 1979 Colnago with ridiculous gear ratios. Oh, yes. So there it is. Little humor there. Little 11 types of cyclists that we all might know along the way. We have got to, we've got some more things for the next week coming up. I've also got some guests coming on here very soon. Upcoming events. We are also pushing hard that this is Bay's Bike Month, and National Bike to Work Week is May 14th through the 18th. Bike Work Day is May 18th. And there will be a gathering in Hartford at the Old State House at 8 a.m. if you are a Connecticut resident and you want to join in on the festivities. There is also one right up here in Stores at the Town Green. Right around the Quabbin, June 16th, 2018. We'll talk more about that in the future. The Seven Lakes Ride, which is coming up on June 24th. These are all local rides in our area up here in northeastern Connecticut and in Massachusetts. Beautiful places to ride your bikes. If you're listening to me from far away, you know, consider coming out and checking this out. Check out our world. It's beautiful out here. We don't have a lot of cars. On July 28th, 2018, the Thread City Century Ride starts at Edward Garrison Park in Chaplin, Connecticut. Beautiful roads once again. And we also have in the third Saturday in August, and I don't have the date in front of me, we have the Steeplechase Bike Tour, which is coming up. Bicycle racing, which is going on all the time here in New England. You can visit bikereg.com and find out all of the local races that are happening within the New England region and all over the United States, too, if you're involved in bicycle racing. My name is Pedalin' Ron, and you have been listening to Bicycle Talk with my co-host, Fran Storch, a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you've been listening to this live or on podcast, and you would like to comment, you can send me an email to bicycletalk1@gmail.com, and you can listen to more past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org or on iTunes. If you have a comment or would like to contribute more information to the show or be on the show as a guest, please send me an email, again, to bicycletalk1@gmail.com. This is Pedalin' Ron. Remember, keep that rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS, Storrs.